You're listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves.
Welcome to Atlanta Baseball Talk, show number 383 in our 10th full season of the podcast. Today is Sunday, September 10th, 2017, and my name is Steve. We hope all our listeners in the Southeast are safe and sound as you listen to the show. No Curtis tonight as he's wrapping up his UGA and Falcons trip in Chicago, but I am joined by Hammy. And folks, before we get started, please help us out by giving us a review on iTunes and spreading the word about the podcast on Twitter and Facebook. All right, Hammy, in tonight's show, as we look to the future, we'll check on how the rookies did this week. We'll play Shot in the Dark and look at the week ahead. But first, we're very happy to be joined by Grant McCauley, the Braves reporter from 92.9 The Game and host of the always great Around the Big Leagues podcast, right after this quick break. Grant McCauley, thanks so much for joining us. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
Yeah, doing good. Thanks. So, Grant, let's start here. How surprised are you that this team will end up this many games under 500 this year?
Well, I don't know that I'm necessarily super surprised that they're a sub-500 team. I think coming out of spring training and looking at everything on paper anyway and seeing what I saw down in Orlando, I kind of had this team pegged for about 75 wins. But I think we can all look at the last 6-7 weeks and say that after getting to 500, it's kind of disappointing to watch them go down the stretch and just really be searching for answers in the way that they have been the last couple of years. But there are some, you know, glimmers of hope, if you will. There are a lot of things that I've been intrigued by going down the stretch. So I don't know that I'm necessarily looking at the record and saying whether or not the team is superbly disappointing or whether or not, you know, I expected them to be contenders in the National League East, which I think was going to be a stretch to begin with. But long story short, I guess I'm not superbly surprised, but I'm a little bit, it's a little strange that they were able to get to 500 and then everything seemed to just go kind of two steps back to where it had been before.
Do you agree with Brandon Phillips' assessment that they got to 500 and just sort of let their, you know, feet off the gas?
You know, Brandon's a very candid guy, and I'm certain that he had his, you know, his finger on the pulse, if you will, of that team. I'm not really sure that I thought about it in the same way that he did, but it certainly looks as such. I mean, this is a club that was able to play over 500 baseball without Freddie Freeman for an extended period of time. And I think getting Freddie Freeman back, I mean, and essentially, you know, Matt Kemp has been in and out of the lineup, so that was another bat that they had been without. He certainly hadn't been the same since April. But I think it really comes down to the pitching. So I don't know if necessarily the team overall really let its foot off the gas or, as Phillips put it, you know, bleeped up, so to speak. But I do think this is a club that, you know, maybe just isn't quite fully matured, if you will, despite some veteran players, to really be equipped for a long season and really being able to play continually good baseball night after night.
All right, I want to talk about sort of the two sides of Dansby's season this year. So first off, what did you think about how the team handled Dansby leading up to his finally being sent down to AAA?
Well, I certainly understood giving Johan Camargo a chance to play. And I think that, like anybody, you know, Dansby Swanson is a guy that, you know, as a young player anyway, there are going to be highs and lows as they develop. I mean, not everybody is Mike Trout, and even Mike Trout, his first, you know, time through the major leagues, really, you know, had his fair share of struggles. The thing is, Mike Trout's a generational ball player, and I think that as fans, sometimes we watch and have that expectation that guys are going to succeed because they should succeed based on hype or based on talent or based on both. And I think that the big thing with Swanson is he's a guy that I think that they put a lot on him, and I think that that became more and more apparent as the year went along. So from a marketing side, I don't know if I'm the club, if I want to pick Dansby Swanson as the guy whose face I put on every single, you know, piece of paper that goes out with a team's name on it, every TV commercial, every billboard, things of that nature. So I think there's a lot of built-in pressure for Dansby, and I think that there's no two ways about the fact that any of us in that situation, you're going to think about it some way, shape, or form. And I think for him, it caused him to press a little bit. And I think that finally going to the minor leagues was a chance for him to reset mentally. Despite only being there for a couple of weeks, he clearly made some adjustments stance-wise. And talking to him after he came back up, he said it was just a chance to slow everything down and to get back on top of things the way that he was accustomed to. Because as we look at what Dansby Swanson has been throughout his entire life, he has been the best player or one of the best players on every team he's ever played for. So this is really his first real failure, if you will, for an extended period of time, these couple of slumps that he had. So I think that as far as the team goes, there was an opportunity to send him down earlier, perhaps, but I kind of stuck with it in the first few weeks, even with Camargo playing in front of him, that maybe just getting that break and being out of the lineup a little bit would be the reset that he needed. But I think AAA ultimately was the right call, that he needed those regular at-bats. I'm glad he got them, and I'm glad he came back up and has been able to get back on the beam.
Yeah, so thinking back to those few weeks that led up to his demotion when they started to, not play him every day and then actually, left him on the bench as Camargo was playing, do you have a sense, Grant, about how much the front office is getting involved in those day-to-day lineup decisions? I remember thinking to myself, Snitker is on a one-year deal and he wants to win as much as he can and he wants to keep his job and have as good a record as possible. But if I'm the front office, I want to play Dansby every day because he's got to work through this and figure it out and he's a foundational piece of the franchise. Do you know if there's friction there?
No, I don't think that there was, and this is just my take on it. And I know a lot has kind of been made, especially after the Ken Rosenthal article that came out a couple of weeks ago about whether or not there is a disconnect between the front office and the managerial staff or what have you. I really look at it more so as a chance at that time, where basically you can kind of look at the results over an extended period of time and it'll tell you perhaps who should be playing. Now, with the Braves, this is not a club that's going to be built into contention for the National League East, for the World Series, even for a wild card for that matter. So giving Dansby Swanson the opportunity to take a step back while giving Johan Camargo the chance to play every day, which I do think that he earned, I think that's the decision most managers are going to make. So I really don't look at Brian Snitker and say that he did anything inherently wrong there. The difference becomes a lot of clubs, depending on where their record is and what they're trying to accomplish and when they're trying to accomplish it, maybe they would allow it to continue longer. And instead of putting Dansby Swanson on the bench for, 2, 3, 4 weeks, whatever it was, they would send him down to AAA. So I don't get the sense that there's a lot of meddling. That's something that did go on with Freddie Gonzalez and with Frank Wren prior to everything changing a few years ago, where there was a lot of feedback coming from the top about who should play where, who should play the most, what the lineup should look like, and things of that nature. And I don't think that's a dynamic that's built for the success of the manager. And I don't necessarily think that for the club, that's something that you really want to dabble in on an everyday basis if you are, in fact, the front office. I mean, you want to delegate these things to someone, put them in a position and allow them to work with some degree of autonomous control. And I think there does need to be a little bit of a line there or a curtain there that, these sides come together and have some bigger discussions, some broader discussions about where they want to go, and then figure out the ways to make it happen. So long story short, I don't really buy that there's a lot of friction there. I don't really know that if you went back that a lot would change about that situation. Maybe they send him to the minors a little bit sooner. But I still think it was one of those times where, you had a player that wasn't performing. And in the big leagues, it's all about numbers. In the minor leagues, you can continue to run them out and run them through it every day and just see what happens. But at the big league level, I do think at the end of the day, you do want to win baseball games because the 25 guys in that locker room aren't really thinking about 2019.
So as much of a joy as it's been to watch Dansby since he's returned, it's equally been as much of a joy to watch Ozzie at the plate.
Oh, yeah.
The last couple of weeks. I mean, it's been great. During the trade, leading up to the trade deadline, the Jose Quintana pursuit, it came out that the Braves had included Ozzie as part of the package they were offering. Do you think that is still in play? Do you think the front office would still consider packaging up Ozzie this offseason, for a frontline starting pitcher or what have you?
That's a really interesting question because you can look at it, two different ways. Number one, do they have the kind of depth that they feel like they can trade in Ozzie Albies? That's, I guess, the first question that you ask when you look at the middle infielders the Braves have and you start assessing, what may be available, what you can go out and get and what you can, you plug into that place if you do trade Ozzie Albies. But I think now that people have had an opportunity to see him at the big league level, to understand the kind of energy that he plays with, the kind of talent that he brings, and just the kind of, I guess, overall, he just makes your team better. And I think that was just going to be the big question was, you know, was he going to get the opportunity to do that, or were they going to be tempted to go out and get a guy like Jose Quintana, or to go out and get a Sonny Gray or a Chris Archer, or whoever it is that's out there? I have this feeling, and maybe it's just from watching him, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I have this feeling that he may have changed the way that they look at him, because you're no longer just looking and saying, well, he's a good prospect, but, you know, prospects are volatile business, and I think we are all going to see this throughout the next few years. Some of these guys are going to come in with a lot of hype, with a lot of fanfare, and they're not going to succeed at the big league level. Maybe not the first time or second time through. Maybe not at all. Maybe some of these starting pitchers are going to turn into relief pitchers. So a lot can happen with the trajectory of a minor league ball player becoming a major league regular. But I think that Ozzie Albies has very quickly answered a lot of questions about defensively what he has to offer, the fact that he and Swanson have this synergy up the middle, which is apparent to anybody that watches this team, and the fact that he makes your lineup better. It may be one of those things that maybe you start looking at different players and different packages that don't include Ozzie Albies if you're going to go out and try to find yourself a frontline starting pitcher, which I may add that I do think that they need. But I think he's kind of a guy that's starting to move into a safer zone than he was in 3, 4, 5 months ago.
Yeah, I mean, it is my hope as well, Grant, that the front office is watching he and Dansby play together, and they're thinking, you know, we can't break these guys up. They're making each other better.
Yeah, I think that that's certainly – the more that they play together, the more success that they have together. I mean, ultimately, if the team plays better and they're a part of that, which we've seen quite a few games where Dansby Swanson and Ozzie Albies have been in the middle of everything. I mean, if you go back about the last 3 to 4 weeks, both of them hitting well over 300 on base percentages, well over 400, extra base hits galore. They're making plays. I mean, sure, there's going to be some errors. There's going to be some miscues. There's going to be the stuff that happens to each and every Major League Baseball player, young or old. But overall, and on the whole, I mean, we're not watching these guys hitting 7 and 8 anymore. I'm sure you've noticed that as well.
Right.
Ozzie Albies get a chance to bat at the top of the order. Dansby Swanson's moved up in the order a little bit. And when you've got Ender Inciarte leading things off, Freddie Freeman's in the middle of that order. And whatever happens with the Kemps and Markakis's, and as we go into the winter, figuring out where you can put Ronald Acuna, this is a club that's better with those two guys here. And I really don't think you can look down on the minors and say, well, we've got better options right now than those two guys up the middle.
All right, Grant, of the rookie starting pitchers who've made their debuts this year, right? So I'm talking Newcomb, Sims, Freed, mm-hmm. Gohara. I know there's a different amount of data points across the four of those guys. But who do you think are the two most likely to become part of the long term in Atlanta?
That's a fascinating question. I'm going to give Sean Newcomb one of those spots because I do believe in that arm. Despite the fact there's been some control issues for him throughout his minor league career, I know a lot of people have slapped that John Lester comparison on him. And if you go back and look at the early returns for a guy like John Lester, walks were a big thing for him too. But the arm, it answered those questions over time. And given the opportunity to continue to refine himself, I think that this is just – that's the kind of arm that when you look at a big, projectable left-hander, a guy that should be able to handle the innings, a guy that should be pretty durable, Sean Newcomb checks a lot of boxes right there. I like Gohara. I haven't seen a ton of him this year. I've only gotten to see him start a couple of times, and, of course, his big league debut didn't go as planned, but that stuff is undeniable. I mean, he's sitting 96-97. He can hit 99 miles an hour. He's got a great slider. He didn't throw a lot of changeups his first time out, but – you know, he's a guy that the more and more I see of him, the more and more as a 21-year-old, you start to hear that not a lot rattles this guy. So for a development standpoint, that's a really good thing to hear. But I think of all the ones that have come up this year, you know, Lucas Sims, certainly we've heard a lot about for a lot of years. I still have always thought that Lucas is more of a bullpen arm, but I am really intrigued with Max Fried. I love the breaking ball. I hate that blisters has been such a problem for him the last couple of years, but he's a guy that I look at and think, you know, that's a Major League Baseball starting pitcher right there. There's some control issues that come with him as well, but Max Fried has always seemed to be a guy that just, he has the composure, he's collected, he learns, he's very cerebral, and he's superbly competitive as well. So there's a lot to like about these guys. So if I had to pick two of them, from what I know and from what I've seen the most, I'm going to go Newcomb and Fried, but I would not sleep on Luis Gohara for a minute, and I'll be fascinated to see what they do with Lucas Sims.
So, Grant, you are around Folty when the team's mm-hmm. at home. Do you think he can overcome the mental side of the game? Because my God, I think the sky's the limit with him. But yeah. the pouting and all of it is it's really a problem.
Yeah, I mean, it's not ideal. I'll say that. I mean, I can understand that. One thing about it is when you look at how stoic some of the pitchers that you see at the top of their game and at the top of Major League Baseball are, that's certainly something that you want to see, is the fact that, all right, the focus is, they're so laser focused that things don't bother them. Little things don't bother them. But then as you kind of peel back the layers and watch some of these guys, I mean, whether it's Max Scherzer or any other hard throwing right-hander who is anchoring a rotation across baseball for the last 20 or 30 years, with Greg Maddux or John Smoltz for that matter, there is that perfectionist side and that competitive streak that's also there. So I think it's finding the balance, to be honest with you. I think you're absolutely right that the sky's the limit, because he's another guy that, I mean, you can coach guys and teach guys a lot of different things, but you cannot teach that kind of velocity. And he's got it, and he has staying power in that velocity. I mean, he can take 96, 97 into the sixth or seventh inning. And in today's game, I mean, you're not asking a guy to complete 12 or 15 ball games. It's just not the way it works anymore. So I think as Folty has gone through the last couple of years, he's been through a great physical challenge with the surgery that he had to have a couple of years ago. And I think that all of that is serving to make him mentally a little bit sharper. But I think we're watching him grow into this. There are days where he goes out there, everything's easy, everything's working, nothing bothers him. There's days where he goes out there and he feels like he's getting squeezed in the strike zone. He doesn't execute a couple of pitches. He makes mistakes. And like any young pitcher, it's how you handle failure, how you handle and overcome those challenges that's really going to help your development. Because it's not about the nights everything's going right. It's about the nights that you don't have your best stuff and things are going wrong. And I think that he has made strides this year, not a finished product, but I think it can happen. And from talking to Mike, it seems like he's getting a lot of bigger picture stuff from working with veteran catchers like Pierzynski, like Tyler Flowers, and like Kurt Suzuki. I think that's helped too.
So it's, of course, absurd, the numbers that jump off the page, that jump off the box score for Ronald Acuna all season. I've seen him a couple times in person up in Gwinnett. And one of the surprising things that jumped out at me was his speed. Like, it was great to watch him run the base paths, the base paths, along with everything else. I imagine you've seen him in person a few times. What surprised you in person when you saw him?
The first time I saw Ronald Acuna was a couple of years ago. The Braves, early in spring training, before any games were being played, and the minor leaguers have finally reported, you know, that week or 10 days after, they'll start bringing guys over and they'll run infield drills and they'll have guys running the bases. And at that time, I watched Ronald Acuna at, I guess, was 17, 18 years old at the oldest, running the bases on the infield at the Wide World of Sports Complex on the big field. And I thought to myself, there's just something different about this guy. I've got to figure out exactly what's going on with him. So, you know, go back, start doing my research, start figuring out, okay, international signing, didn't pay a lot for him, but man, that guy can run. And then the next spring, when you come back, you know, after he's played in rookie ball and played some of the really lower level stuff, he comes over and Chipper Jones had been brought in to do some, you know, special assistant stuff, special coaching assignments. And when Chipper Jones picks you out of a lineup in the minor leagues and says, these are some guys I like, then you start to think, okay, well, here's the guy who knows exactly how the game should be played and what it looks like and what it takes. And now he's saying Ronald Acuna is a guy to keep your eye on. I think I'll keep my eye on Ronald Acuna. Went into last season, he got hurt, tore up his thumb on a slide, which is unfortunate. It cost him a good chunk of the season, but he got back. He was a force for Rome. He blitzed right through the winter league, and he came back this spring, and I don't think there was much hiding the fact that he was talented. But to see what he's done this year and to watch him get progressively better at every stop, I mean, you look at high A, those are his lowest numbers, his worst strikeout rate, his worst walk rate. He got better in double A, and somehow at 19 years old, the youngest player in triple A, he got better by the time he got to Gwinnett. So it's amazing to watch him in all phases of the game. He's a five-tool player. It's the truest sense. You're absolutely right about the speed. I think it's something that jumps out. But his ability at this age, even though he strikes out some, you know, putting that aside because I think it's more forgiven in the game now, he's a guy that I just look at the power and the ability to make adjustments as something that's going to keep him out of lengthy slumps. And it's also his baseball acumen at 19, you know, raw ability plus instincts plus everything else that goes in making a good player great, he's got it all. And that, I think, has been just eye-opening over the last year, because coming into the season, again, I do a top 30 prospects, and I had Acuna, I think at 12 coming into the season, or maybe it was a 10, but either way, he was outside the, you know, the top 10 prospects. And the only reason why was because I hadn't seen enough of him. By the time we got to midseason, he's the best player I've seen in this organization in a long time. And it's not particularly close either. He's just that good. So I'm very intrigued to see how he does in the fall league. And I'm very intrigued to see what the Braves do to open up a spot for him come next spring training. And let's see if he gets the same kind of opportunity that Jason Hayward got a few years ago, where they just decide, you know what, this kid's ready. There's no reason to send him back to the minor leagues. He's got nothing left to prove there. Let's give him a shot at the big leagues and see what happens.
Well, Grant, you very nicely queued up my next question, and let's finish up with a lightning round, some predictions. So, first question, true or false, Acuna is on the opening day 25-man roster?
I'm on the hype train, so I'm going to say true. Ronald Acuna will make the Braves opening day roster.
All right. Name the five starting pitchers to start the season in 2018.
Given what we have right now, I will go Julio Teheran. I'll say Ari Dickey gets his option picked up. I'll say Mike Fultonevich, Sean Newcomb, and Max Fried.
So you don't think they trade Julio in the offseason?
I don't. And one of the big reasons why is that contract is just one of the best in baseball for a 26, 27-year-old pitcher that he'll be next year. There's a lot of value there. And I think if they truly are trying to build something and put it all together, given what we've seen from Julio here in the last month and a half or so, you start to feel a little bit better about, you know, where he may be going forward, and that he may be back closer to what he was, you know, the last few years. And I think he's getting there. But to have the talent and at the levels that you need to have in that rotation, and to have experience, especially for a guy that should have some mileage left on him, I think it's pretty important to have a guy like Julio Teheran around.
All right, true or false, Nick Markakis is on the opening day roster?
I'm going to say false. I think Nick Markakis is the piece that has to move for Ronald Acuna to play in the big leagues. I think that Matt Kemp has more money attached to him. I'll be impressed if the club can move it, but I don't necessarily expect Matt Kemp to be the guy that goes. So I'll say Markakis is the one that goes.
All right, and final one, true or false, Brian Snitker is the manager on opening day next year?
Given my indications, I'm going to say true. But I do think that there is an opportunity for the club to really assess where they want to go long-term beyond this 1 year. So I won't be surprised if this is a storyline that we're monitoring all winter long. But sitting here right now, just given what we know, I do think that Brian Snitker will be back.
Yeah, if last year's finish got him the job, this year's mm-hmm. finish could lose him the job. I mean, it just seems like the math works out.
It does. And I think that there's questions that every club should be asking itself when it goes in the winter, which is, you know, how can we be better? It's not about, you know, well, do all of us get along and who's got a political axe to grind? Yeah, sometimes that plays into it. Sure. We've seen a little bit of upheaval for the Braves in changing over their front office, you know, 3 years ago and moving away from Frank Rind, who did a pretty good job of building a major league club that was competitive for the majority of his time as GM. But he did not do a great job in some other facets that were extremely important for the club, including keeping an eye on the future of the team in the minor league level, which they certainly have done now. So Brian Snitker is a guy that's been keen in the development of players for a long time. He's been in the organization for 40 plus years. He's well liked, and that's all of those things are great. But you're looking at a major league manager, I think, as a guy that you want to lead the team in a lot of ways. It's the game of baseball has changed. I mean, these are multi-million dollar athletes. They can tune anybody out, trust me. But I do think they like playing for Snit. I do think that he brings a good message, and I think that he keeps them where they need to be in terms of, you know, trying to center the team up and not let them get into the peaks and valleys of a long season. But invariably, injuries, attrition, and struggles are going to do what they do. But I think Snit's done a good job with what he's been given. But I also think it's kind of foolish to look at this club and say, well, anything less than 500 is a disappointment, because I don't really think that he had all the pieces to get there, to be honest with you. And neither did Freddy Gonzalez a couple of years before that.
All right, folks, make sure you listen to Grant's Around the Big Leagues podcast, or you can listen to it live Saturday mornings on 92.9 The Game. And of course, Grant is a must follow on Twitter. Grant, really appreciate your time. Great to talk to you, and look forward to talking to you again. So, Ham, September call-ups this week, most notably Max Fried, Luis Gohara, Rio Ruiz, and some notables coming off the DL, the biggest name being Johan Camargo, of course. And it all means more looks...
Sorry,
and Adonis.
Okay, thank you.
So, you know, just more looks at the future of the team for the rest of the season here as we play out September. So let's see how the rookies did this week. We'll start with Luis Gohara's major league debut from this past Wednesday, the first game of that doubleheader against the Rangers. Gohara, as a reminder, started the season in single A and made it all the way to the majors. And his box score, Hammy, for sure was not great. 4 innings, 6 earned, 4 walks. But, Ham, he looks really impressive.
He does. He's got nasty stuff. I'm excited for that.
Yeah, 6 strikeouts. His slider looked great. I mean, I'm ready to see more. I hope we get a couple more starts from him this season.
Yeah. Yep. Ditto.
All right, so on to Max Fried, coming off his impressive start and first major league win at Wrigley. He had a rough time of it Saturday night against the Marlins, 3 2/3, 3 earned. After the game, he talked about not having a feel for his curveball, which made it hard to put batters away, and it showed. But, Ham, I agree with what Grant said in our interview. I think Fried is going to be part of the rotation on day one next year and is really going to be special.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, he reminds me more of a finesse pitcher. Like, Gohara is one of those power pitchers, it looks like. Obviously, with some finesse, but Fried is going to be one of those guys like a Glavin, you know, who just controls it. And he was having a hard time getting the ball down in his second start, but I think he's got great stuff. I'm excited for him. Yeah, and I think next year, I've said it third week in a row, I think he is in the starting rotation at the top of the season next year.
Yep. All right, so on to Sean Newcomb, who continued his rookie campaign with a start against the Marlins. And after early trouble, he looked really good. He relied on his fastball much more, not his curveball. And he had a number of swinging strikes on that pitch. Now, of course, he had 3 walks. But, you know, keep it at 3. Like, if he can just keep it at 3, you know, when he starts to get to 4 and 5, I mean, it's just so much trouble.
Yeah. Well, I think we're going to see a lot of starts next year that are less than 5 innings pitched, more than 5 runs earned, an equal number of strikeouts and balls, walks from Newcomb, from Gohara, from Fried even. I mean, that's a rookie start, you know, rookie quality start. I think we have a lot of those in front of us over the next season. But I think there's good things on the other side of that.
Yeah. All right. So let's move on to position players and start with, according to Brian Snitker, the September call-up who will get the most starts at third base in Rio Ruiz. So first off, he's looked really good on defense, much better than I remembered him at the beginning of the year. Now, at the plate, as hot as he was in Chicago when he first got called up, he went 5-for-11 with a double and a homer in that series at Wrigley. He cooled off at the plate this week. 5 starts this week. He was 4-for-20. All singles, 1 walk.
Yeah.
So, Ham, I don't buy that the Braves really think he's an option for third base next year. I think this is about showcasing him for the offseason so they can package him with, you know, name the player. What do you think?
Yeah, it's got to be because he's not. I mean, he's had a couple of opportunities now to seize the moment and show that he is the third baseman and sort of take it back from Camargo. Because it is Camargo's to lose at this point. For Ruiz, I just don't see a future here. So that's all I can hope. I hope that they're not just going to keep running him out here thinking that just by doing that, he's all of a sudden going to become the third baseman we need him to be, because I don't think he is.
Yeah, I don't think he is. And look, he could surprise us and make it a difficult decision for them. I just don't know that that's who Ruiz is. But,
he hasn't done it yet. There's
a few more weeks.
Yeah.
All right, so staying with third base, and as you mentioned, Camargo. So Camargo, across 3 starts, he had 2 at third, 1 at short in Sunday's finale against the Marlins, and a couple of pinch hit at bats. He just kept hitting. 6-for-14 with a double and a homer. So, Ham, Camargo finishing strong will make the offseason more interesting because, I still hope that the Braves look to free agency or trade for a third baseman, but Camargo could make that decision, you know, harder for them.
Yeah, or at least make it easier to delay it a year. As we say, the Braves aren't contending next year. It's nice to know that Camargo is a solid option there. And maybe we wait a year and we don't have to invest in a third baseman this season and we can invest somewhere else. So it's great. It's great. And who knows? I mean, you know, maybe Camargo adjusts and maybe it's Albies, Dansby, and Johan, you know. Who knows? But certainly, he's certainly everybody's waiting for, can he adjust, right? Just like Dansby had your first time through the league. People don't know you quite yet. The book's not out on you. But eventually they catch up, and now he was injured. I mean, here's the big time for him to show. Can he adjust, and can he continue to do well? And so far, so good, at least with a short, you know, a small sample set this week.
You know, the only thing about that, Ham, is if you don't spend all of your money on starting pitching, and I would love for them to go out and get a frontline starter. I think that would be great. There's nowhere else to spend money but third base, right? You're not going to get rid of Kemp. So Inciarte in center and hopefully Acuna on day one in right. And then, I don't think you're going to go out and spend big money on a catcher. So third base is kind of it. So,
well, maybe. I see where you're going, but bullpen, right? I mean, we have some holes. Maybe you sign a couple veteran guys to two-year deals that cost a little bit more.
It worked so well with Jim Johnson. Yeah. Sorry. It's a cheap shot.
It is. It is, Steve. But it's right, but cheap nonetheless. Yeah, I don't know. But maybe, maybe somebody's not – there's not a big – we're saying this without having the list in front of me. Maybe there's a better free agent coming on the market in 2 years than 1 year, and we're not panicking at third.
All right, so let's finish up in the infield with Dansby and Ozzie. So fewer hits for Dansby this week. He was 4-for-18. But his continued improved eye at the plate – leading to the numerous walks. He had 6 walks this week. So he's still on base over 400 this week.
Yeah. 6 strikeouts this week. That was disconcerting.
Yeah. So. But I mean, still.
But
it is night and day.
Oh, it is. It is. But that's his worst week in recent memory. Certainly since he
he came back up.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, his strikeouts have been down a lot. Did you know the Braves have the third lowest strikeout rate in the league?
No, I didn't. That's great. My God, it's like
night and day from where we were 3 years ago.
Well, I was going to say, right, with the Upton brothers and Ugla and all that mess.
Yeah.
All right. And Ozzie went 8-for-30 with 2 doubles and a triple. So not the average we've seen from Ozzie the past couple of weeks. He's really been hitting for average as well. But some big hits and more looks at his power. I mean, Ham, as excited as I am for the Acuna era to start next year, I'm about equally excited to see a full year of Dansby and Ozzie together in 18.
I am too. And I think in 2 years, 3 years, we're still under the radar nationally. The Braves are.
But true.
Yeah, I know. But these guys aren't household names, but they're going to I think they're really going to make a splash on the national stage too. Like, I think because they're all likable, they're all so young and so talented. I think they're going to become stars in front of our eyes, and they're going to be Braves, and the Braves are going to be an exciting team to talk about in the media, and getting games on ESPN again and stuff like that. So it's exciting. The future is very, very exciting.
Agreed. All right, Ham. Next up is Shot in the Dark, but first a quick break. Shot in the Dark, our predictions for the coming week. And let's start by reviewing how everyone did last week. And we'll begin with our listener shot in the dark from Cody Harris, who predicted that the rookies would hit over 300 with 15 extra base hits. Close on average, as Rio, Camargo, Dansby, and Albies hit 268, but single digits in extra base hits this week. So thanks for sending that in, Cody. Let's see how the three of us did, Ham.
All right.
So you predicted that third base would get 12 hits, 4 extra base hits, and 4 runs scored. 8 hits for third base, 4 runs scored. You were right there, 2 extra base hits.
Yeah, a weak power week for the Braves.
Yeah. All right, Kurt predicted that Lucas Sims would go 6+, give up 2 earned or less, and 6 strikeouts. But Curtis was pranked by the front office, as Sims got sent to the bullpen and is no longer a starter the rest of the season.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So he, for the record, he did have 2 appearances, 3 1/3, 1 earned, 3 strikeouts. And I predicted that Camargo would bat under 100 and that Ruiz would bat over 300. And it was the complete opposite.
Yes.
Camargo batted 428, while Ruiz batted 200. So we're into our fifth straight week of no winner. We're like the Dodgers of shot in the dark.
Wow. How quickly they have fallen.
Oh, my God. We're recording this on a Sunday. They lost their 10th straight today.
Crazy.
It's insane. Did the Orioles win today, by the way?
They're playing right now. They're playing the Indians right now. Indians are going for 18.
I'm sorry. I said Orioles, and I really meant Indians. They're the Sunday night game?
Yep.
Very nice. God, it would be great for the Indians to beat that 20-game streak.
Yep.
Just because that's just good stuff.
Yeah.
All right, Ham, what do you have for this coming week?
I have that Albies and Swanson will combine for 15 or more hits for the week.
All righty. And Kurt has positive memories of his trip to Chicago.
Yes.
But no shot in the dark submission.
It's worth it.
Because
worth
he it. Failed to send it in. Yes.
Well.
I think Kurt's not going to do well next week in shot in the dark.
And still somehow be tied with us.
Yeah, that's right. So I'm predicting that Gohara, who's going to face the Nationals this week, he's going to give up fewer earned runs and get more strikeouts than his opponent, Gio Gonzalez. All right, folks, don't forget to send in your shot in the dark before first pitch on Tuesday. And if we pick yours, we'll discuss it on next week's show. All right, Ham, let's look at the week ahead. So 6 games, all on the road, 3 with the Nationals, 3 with the Mets, and here are the pitching matchups. So as we mentioned, Gohara, he gets his second major league start. He faces Gio Gonzalez and his 2.50 ERA. Gio's been really good. Next up, Tehran versus Tanner Roark and his 4.48. And then finishing up in Washington, Newcomb faces Scherzer and his 2.32. Scherzer, if you didn't know, also very good.
Heard of him.
Yes. All right. On to New York. Folti will face Rafael Montero in his 5.05. Next up, Max Fried gets DeGrom and his 3.63. And then we'll finish up the week with the sexy matchup of R.A. Dickey versus Matt Harvey and his 5.82. My God, is Matt Harvey ever going to be good again?
No.
No, he's not.
You said sexy, and I thought Cologne was somehow involved.
Oh, how the Mets have fallen.
Oh, I know. Strangely. I mean, you think of that pitching they have.
Well, yeah. It all got injured, you know?
And yeah.
All right. So, Ham, what do you think? 6 games this week. What do the Braves do?
I think we go 2-4, 0-3, 2-1.
Swept in Washington.
Yeah, I feel it. It just feels like one of those seasons where they just own us.
All right. I'm going 3-3, 1-2 in Washington, 2-1 in New York. Nice week for the Braves, by the way. I mean, taking 3 of 4 from Florida, and 2 of them, well, one a walk off. Well, I guess they were 2 walk offs. One was in extra innings.
Yep.
One was in the 9th. Pretty good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Offense really shined. Pitching not so great, but and Whistler.
Oh, Whistler! Come on, man. He's done.
He's done.
He's done.
I mean, he's the mop up guy.
Right, and not doing that well. I mean, there's nowhere else to put him.
No, it's too bad.
I really wonder, do they release him? Do they just keep him as depth in AAA? I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they just try to trade him or give him away for pennies on the dollar or something in the offseason that Whistler's just gone.
Yeah.
Because really all he can hope for now is he's a change of scenery guy.
Yeah, yep.
Which could well be. I mean, Whistler certainly had some great
sure,
stuff.
There are those moments, but it's not about what you can do like in one game here or there. You got to sustain it. And he's just been so much more bad than good. And that good was so long ago.
Yeah. And consistently bad in short appearances, no less.
Yeah.
I mean, he makes quick work of giving up runs.
Yep. Hyper efficient.
All right, folks, that is the show. Remember, you can find us at Blog Talk Radio, as well as iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. And as always, you can find us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com to access our past shows, our blogs, and to post in our comments section. And be sure to follow us on Twitter at ATL Baseball Talk and to like us on Facebook. Thanks again for listening, and go Braves!
Thanks for listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves. To find new shows, to post in our forum, or to send a comment, please visit us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com. Had to admit